This recording is a production of Faith Builders Resource Group. This recording was made at Reach 2022, a conservative Anabaptist ministry convention hosted by Faith Builders Educational Programs on March 24 and 25, 2022, in Lancaster, Pennsylvania.
Well, good afternoon, everyone. It's good to see you here. And it's certainly been a blessing to be here today. I hope that everybody is really enjoying and being filled by how God is working here at this event so far. So welcome to the workshop on ordering your digital world. I'm just curious here, before we get started, could I have somebody, two people maybe, tell me a little bit about what you're hoping to learn here this afternoon and what brought you to the talk? Anybody want to volunteer? Yes.
Organization of digital note taking going paperless.
Okay.
How to order everything. So
yep.
I can find it.
Yep. So anything that anyone wants to add to that? What are you hoping to learn? So I know that. A friend pointed out to me in reference to this talk that, you know, some organizations, due to COVID, had to go through about 4 years worth of digitalization in about 6 months' time. So I see some heads nodding. I understand that that's been a pressure that we have certainly felt as of late. And it just really accentuates what we've probably all been feeling and realizing as we are waking up, so to speak, in this world that is increasingly digital. And trying to figure out how to do that well is challenging because it's not so tangible. It's not so straightforward as cleaning your room or organizing your filing drawer. And so that's specifically what we do want to look at today. And by way of introduction, I will just say briefly that I am 32 years old. I am a digital immigrant, so I remember a lot of the big events that happened with the explosion of digital technologies, and that's certainly given an interesting perspective on how this affects us and how this should work. I am not a naturally neat an organized person. And so I have somebody want to take that guy to a different workshop. Okay, thank you. So so the reality is I know very, very well the effects of entropy on my life and on my work. And I also know that it's worth caring about this part of our lives. And it's worth doing what we can to keep our lives in order. And so that's what I want to share with you this afternoon, is a little bit of notes from the battlefield, so to speak, of how to do better when it comes to the digital world. So there's three aspects to this talk. The first one is just a vision for using technology in a purposeful way. The second one is a basic primer on digital literacy, how to use these tools well. And these two points were the emphasis of my first talk that I gave back in 2017. So I don't want to dwell on here a lot. If you want to hear more about those two subjects, you can look back at that recording. I should have said, by way of introduction, for notes, if you want to follow along with notes, you can go to orderingyourdigitalworld.com. That will bring up the slide deck for this presentation. So the third part of the talk is tactical strategies for digital effectiveness. And this is really where I want to dwell the majority of our time here. So how do you as an individual and as a family and as an organization be more effective with your digital tools and organization? So to begin with, we're going to talk about digital agency. And I just want to comment on this. The subject of staying human in our virtual world of the internet is very near and dear to my heart. This is not a talk about how, you know, necessarily how to become as digital as possible. I think that we should use digital tools in a very thoughtful way, in a very careful way. Just digitizing your whole entire life and organization is not a great idea, and it's not the purpose of what we will be talking about. So don't overly digitize. Think about keeping devices in their place, in their proper place. Use digital technologies as a tool for very specific purposes, and think about how to keep them there, because they will try to grow into spaces that are bigger than what you create for them. So with that being said, I have this digital literacy matrix that I created, and I visualized, or I spent some time on in the last presentation. So I'm just going to pull this up here. So this is just a picture of what I think we should be aiming for when it comes to how we use technology. So I have two axes here. One is agency, and that is the idea of being principled and purposeful in what we do. This one is the axes of aptitude. How proficient and perceptive, how effective are we at what we can do? And I think there's four main quadrants we can fall into when it comes to how we use technologies. We can just simply consume what comes along and not really be very purposeful or very good at anything. And that's not a great place to stay. If, however, we learn to be really good at technology, but we never learn to master it in a purposeful way, for specific purposes, then we just become a technophile. Okay? And this isn't a great place to be either. Really, what we want to do is we want to learn how to use technology in ways that are very effective for whatever specific God-given purposes we have in life. And so if you are trying to use technology, but you're struggling with it, you're going to be down here at the bottom in this illiterate category. And the focus of today is to really emphasize, let's try to move up here to this fourth quadrant of being somebody who knows how to use the tools well and is very determined to and able to use them in a effective way. So hopefully that makes sense. It's something that has been helpful for me to think about, and I think we could all afford to think about in this area. So as part of that, I have a couple points I want to review. First one is traits of technology intoxication, and this is excerpts from a book, High Tech, High Touch, by John Nisbet. What's interesting about this book is that by now it's probably 30 years old, and he writes in a way that we look at it and we're like, yeah, he's describing our world. I think it was a book that was a bit ahead of its time, or we think our problems are unique or something. But think about this. I think he has some really good points here. Technology does affect us as humans. If we allow it to intoxicate us, it will create us into people that favor the quick fix, from religion to nutrition. We fear and worship technology. We blur the distinction between the real and fake. We accept violence as normal. We love technology as a toy. We live our lives distracted and distanced. Does this sound familiar to anyone? Can we relate? So let's think about the counter side of technology proaction. And these are just excerpts from some points I brought out from the book of 1 Corinthians that I believe certainly apply to this area of our lives. So these are counterpoints. We favor what is substantive and lasting. We pursue effectiveness in serving others. We recognize God in everything. We value love above everything. We choose what is healthy and helpful. And we live our lives in light of the age to come. Anybody want to be here? Let's all strive to be here. And let's recognize how this realm of our lives certainly does affect which side of that paradigm we're living on. So as we move on from that vision, of digital agency, let's talk about some basic literacy points. So when it comes to using a computer effectively, some of these points should be a given, but I just want to touch on them. First of all, if you don't know how to type and you're trying to use a computer as a significant part of your job, please do yourself and everyone else a favor. Go learn to type. Spend at least 20 minutes a day practicing typing. Also, another point that a lot of people don't understand well is common keyboard shortcuts. Now, the reality is there's a gazillion shortcuts that you could learn for how to use a computer. And the idea behind a computer shortcut is that anytime you're moving your hands between your mouse and keyboard, you're wasting time. And trying to find the right button to click on with your mouse is going to take time. And so knowing a couple quick things that you can do with your keyboard is very helpful in using a computer effectively. And I emphasize just doing the common ones. So once again, in this note, I'm gonna refer you back to this slide deck because I have some links and things on here that are helpful. This is a good card to print out and put beside your keyboard on your desk just to have the most common shortcuts handy and get them ingrained into your consciousness. These are things that work in almost every computer, almost every application, and you can get a long way along by learning how to use these well. Another thing that is in the realm of shortcuts that I find a lot of people also don't understand is how to select series of items with your keyboard and mouse. And so let me explain what I mean. This is a little bit abstract, but let's say, for example, that I'm working in this, I'm working with these files, and I have something I want to do, maybe moving a bunch of files around, and I want to select just a subset of all of the files in this folder. Well, Shift, Control, and your mouse work together in this really fine-tuned way when you're working with lists of items on a computer. So, for example, if I want to select a whole bunch of items in a series, I can select the first item and then hold in Shift and go down the list and click again, and that will select a whole series of items. If I use Control and go back and click on individual items, that will make individual selections and deselections. The reason that this is so useful is that it's also almost universal, okay? This applies to working in a spreadsheet. It applies to working with files. It applies to almost every kind of program where you're working with lists. So learn how to use that functionality. It's very, very worthwhile. Let's see. Next, we want to look at creating orderly workspaces. So this is moving beyond the basics. And I want to talk about thinking about your computer workspace as if it were your workshop, or as if it were your room, or as if it were your office. How do we make it clean and tidy and organized in a place that we can feel productive and worth using? So the first one that is extremely basic is the first thing that you should do when you get a new computer or a phone or whatever it is go ahead and clear everything off of it that you don't need. And it's just amazing how many things come with that computer because some publisher paid your manufacturer to put it there, and it's not helpful. It's just distracting cruft that's going to get in your way when it comes to doing profitable work. So clean your workspace like you clean your counter. Clean your computer in the same way. Make it nice and orderly. I have a link for a utility that works really well on Windows to uninstall a whole slew of computers at once. So you'll find that in the slide deck. Go get that utility. Uninstall everything you don't need. Unsubscribe from your junk mail. Okay? If you're getting emails that are not helpful, don't just delete it. Scroll down to the bottom and click unsubscribe, because this is more noise in your life that is unhelpful and unnecessary. Get rid of it. It's your choice whether or not you are receiving emails from any particular publisher. So I'll say it again, unsubscribe. With web browsing, a couple things that I think are pretty important when it comes to maintaining a focused work environment with a web browser. The first one I can't highly recommend enough is using an ad blocker. So there's a link for this as well. Install Adblock Plus or some other ad blocker in your web browser. That will clean up, in my experience, 50% of the internet right there. It's a bit of an unfortunate reality that some people do rely on that for their income, and there is some legitimate advertising that occurs, but so much of it is just gross, inappropriate, unhelpful things that don't deserve to be there. Yes?
That's still effective. I find so many times it says disable your ad block for this article or something.
Yeah, sure. Well, there is more of a controversy and awareness of ad blockers, and there's more of a pushback in the industry. I think at the point in time where you're told you can't use this site unless you disable your ad blocker, you have to decide, is it worth it? Do I still want to use this site? Do I want to pay for their membership in some other way? If I am going to use them, is their advertising legitimate? Those are just all considerations you'll need to make at that point. Thank you. Appreciate the question. If there's any other questions at any point in time, please speak up. Try to eliminate the clutter as much as possible. Once again, web browsers love to push news feeds and notifications and pop-ups all over the place. It's your choice whether or not you're going to live with that, whether or not you're going to have that there as a distracting force in your life. Clean it up. Turn it off, if it can be turned off. Web browsers are coming out with a reading mode, which allows you to read articles in a cleaned up format. That's a very helpful way that I find to engage with the web. Use a password manager. This one is kind of big because security is becoming more and more crucial. And so the fact of the matter is, for most of us, we're overwhelmed because our brains are not, our brains are not made to be keeping track of all kinds of random passwords that we should be creating in order to use all of these different sites that we use. And so the password management programs are there to solve that need. They will help to keep your access secure, and I would say please take advantage of them. I have a link as well to my recommendation for that. Last of all, one window per task, one tab per site. This is just a general recommendation that I have for how to use the internet. So I'll just give you an example here of some of these things. First of all, as far as cleaning up and using focus mode, here's an example of Microsoft Edge. Here's what the new tab page looks like now. If I would let focus mode, or if I would keep up with their defaults, every time that I go to use the web, they would be pushing all of this content at me that is really not very helpful, and I don't need, if I need it, I can find it, right? So use the controls that are available to clean that up. Something like installing an ad blocker is as easy as going to adblockplus.org. Once again, a link to this. It's a little extension that you install in your browser. It'll run up in the top corner, and it will keep your internet experience very cleaned up. As far as how I recommend using the web, so these tabs are here for your use. So generally, when I'm working on one project and I need to use different websites, I'll try to keep all of those websites together in the same window, separated by tabs. Then you can easily switch back and forth between those sites. If you have a new project you need to work on, well, grab a tab and pull it down and make a new window. Let's see. Okay, so it's as easy as this. Grab a tab, pull it down, make a new window. Now you have a new window to work on your new project. You can stay focused on that project. When you're ready to move back, you close this window and move back to what you were working on before. Make sense? One tap per site, one window per task. Okay. Use the bookmarks bar. So this is also here. So up here at the top, you can turn this on. Bookmarks bar is a great way to keep track of sites that you use frequently and that you want to remember. It's way better to have those sites saved than have to try to remember in the future what those important sites are that you need to get back to. Installing sites as apps. So this is a newer thing that's very useful. If you have a site that you use quite a bit, then it's probably worthwhile installing that as an app. So I'm just going to show you here with my Gmail account. I'm going to go here to apps and hit install this site as an app. And what that's going to do is it's going to allow this particular website to run in its own dedicated window. So number one, I'm seeing and using more of the site at the at any given point in time because all the other browsing controls are out of the way. Number two, it has a dedicated application icon on my taskbar or in my start menu or wherever I need it. So if I need to come back and use this site in the future, I don't need to go back and find where that tab is or find where that bookmark is. It's always right there and available. This is a really good productivity hack, so to speak, that works on any operating system. You can now install sites as apps. All right. Essential apps, I think I'm going to just mention that this is in the slide deck, and we're going to keep moving for now. If you want recommendations on things like a note-taking app, office application, finding more apps, you can find those in the slide deck. All right, let's move ahead. Okay. Now, let's get more into some organization things. So, first of all, creating shared workspaces. So this is really the crux of the issue when it comes to how to work and organize ourselves effectively as teams and as organizations, is you need to have shared spaces where you can work at projects together and where you can keep your files together. So the first thing that you need to do is obviously decide what that workspace or what that shared space is going to consist of. So you can go with a cloud service, and if you want to go with a cloud service, these are services where all of your files are stored in some other data center, and you don't need to worry about keeping up with servers and with backups and what. Well, you probably should still back up your application or your files, but they make sure that your files are available at any point in time, and they facilitate the sharing of files across teams and organizations for you. So the popular ones I have listed here, Dropbox, Google Drive, Microsoft OneDrive. My biggest recommendation is it's probably wise to stay within one ecosystem if you can help it. So for example, if you already use a lot of Microsoft products, then there will be an advantage of going with the Microsoft shared storage. If you're happy with the Google services and that's what you and those that you collaborate with use, then Google's probably a good solutions provider. When it comes to sharing these files back and forth, there are advantages of using the system that's provided by the vendor of the software that you use. You can also get a network server, and this is a good idea for a lot of organizations and even families, in my opinion. A network server is, and these devices are far more available, accessible, easy to set up and use than they ever have been before. So here's an example of just a little box that you can put on your shelf somewhere. You stick some hard drives in that thing, and it provides ready access to shared storage and other applications that you can roll out and use for yourself or for your team. And these things, like I said, they're way easier to use and and set up than they ever have been before. And they also come with services, if you buy from one like Synology, that will allow you to use that storage as if it were a cloud service, where you can still access it from anywhere in the world. You can still install access device applications on your different devices to make sure that your team has access to those files. The advantage here is that when you have your files locally, if you have a lot of things that you're storing, you will have a speed advantage of keeping your files in one network where everybody can access those files simultaneously. It also is cheaper in the long run to buy your own storage, so that has to be a consideration when it comes to the storage space that your team needs. So as you set up storage and you think about how are we going to organize our spaces, we get to talk about folder structures. And this is the fun part. So how do we figure out where do you put those files that you have? Because you have files coming in from all over the place. So what I'm going to recommend as a conversation piece or a starting place for you and your team is think about your digital spaces and work, starting off with your life accounts. So life accounts is a term that I'm borrowing from a book by Michael Hyatt and Daniel Harkavy called Living Forward. It's a book about life planning, and they build their case on this idea of having, of thinking about your life as if it was comprised of many different bank accounts, and each of those bank accounts have a positive or a negative balance, and you have to think about how to maintain them well. And the idea is to think about what are the major components of my life that I care about, and how am I doing in each of those places in my life. So as far as ordering your life in general, I can recommend this resource. It's a good starting point. But what I find interesting about these life accounts is that these life accounts, when you think about it, they're really just any distinct priority in your life where you need to invest energies. So, for example, your life accounts, for yourself personally, they might consist of something like this: my career, my health, my hobbies, my education, my children, my friends, okay? Those are these distinct priorities that you have in your life. When it comes to an organization, well, we already kind of have this department understanding in organizations. So those priorities for what organizations have to deal with, more or less, correspond most times with what we would call our departments. So you might have your sales department that's responsible for customers. You have your bookkeeping and your purchasing department. You have your manufacturing, your sales, human resources, etc. So this is also more or less corresponds with this idea of life accounts. But the reason that I really like life accounts is that I think it's an idea that we can take and utilize at almost any level. So you can think about it for yourself personally. And what my wife and I found is that when we listed our own personal life accounts and we wrote out a plan for how are we going to do well in these areas of our lives, it was a very natural step for us to then go and think about what accounts exist for our family. And how are we going to make plans for what the life of our family should look like? And from that level, I think you're pretty well poised to also start applying the same concepts to almost any different area of your life, be that your work or organizations that you volunteer with or whatever that may be. So I want to do a little bit of interactive exercise here. Let's think about what this list might consist of for some of you in this room. So, Landon, what are your priorities at your workplace? What are some of the things that are distinctly important for you to achieve and tend to?
So, as a school principal, academics is one.
Uh-huh, so you care about the academics, all right.
We also have the aspect of patrons.
You have to deal with student families and make sure you're interacting with them well, all right? That's good? Okay. So this is a good starting point for a school administrator. All right. How about others? Where do you work and what are some of your priorities?
I work part-time for my son.
Okay.
And I'm the estimator to go out and do the job.
Okay. You do estimating? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So at your work, what are some of the things that you prioritize the most and care about the most?
I want to have a good experience in my relationship with the customer because mm-hmm. I'm the first contact that they see face-to-face most times.
Okay.
So I'm good.
Yep. So in your case, these customers and their jobs are... They're your highest priority, right?
Right, they're important.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, anybody else want to volunteer? What comes to your mind when you think of the priorities that you have to face in your life or work?
Budget would be another one.
Okay. The budgeting process. So, what's interesting about these lists as we develop them is that once you have your list created of your priorities in your life or your work, you are ready to start to order and organize your digital life as well. Because the reality is, once you know what your highest priority is, everything else fits under those priorities, okay? So this is your first level. This should be your first level organization structure. Keep those things immediate and handy that are most important to you. Let me give you an example of life and family accounts. So this is for my own family. And the reason I'm starting here is because this is something that I think we can all relate to. Obviously, we don't all have families. But in terms of starting by organizing your own life and your own personal space. That's a good place to start within this journey. So here is what the life account list or priority list looks like for my wife and I and our families. And these are not in any particular order. They are just the list that we came up with. So home and family, children, community, friends, marriage, extended family, church, library of resources, and then my wife and I each have where we store our own things. So under home and family then, we've broken down that priority into things like finances, health, houses, legal concerns, our life plans, the meals, our practices and traditions, and our schedules. So these are things that, once again, we started with from the aspect of planning our lives, how to live well, and then as we figure out those priorities and structure those priorities, we have something that we can use to order and organize our life. And I'll show you how this looks. Under our children, our priorities for them are their school, their activities, legal concerns for them, and their health. And let me just show you yet. Let's see. Under community, neighbors, actually I'm just going to skip over to our personal ones. Okay, this is what our personal ones look like. For me, career, health, hobbies, journals, life plan, education, writings, and talks. So what's really neat is that once you come up with this structure for what are your priorities and how do they fit under each other, is that this becomes a structure that you can now apply consistently everywhere. Okay, you don't just apply it to how you live your life, you apply it to how you organize your life. And let me show you what I mean by that. So if you recall what that structure looked like, you will notice that the files on my computer follow that structure. This is how I organize my files, because these are the important things in my life, and now I know that there's a place for everything and everything in its place. If you look at the folders on my email, guess what? They follow the same structure. Okay? If you look at the categories for my note-taking app, if it loads here, it's going to be the same thing. If you look at the bookmarks bar in my web browser, guess what? It's there again. Okay? Once you know what your priorities are, you know what the big things are that you need to worry about in your life or your work, you can start to use that. And you can start to use that almost everywhere. And that consistency is key in helping you keep a place for everything and everything in its place. Does that make sense?
Yep.
All right. Very well. Now let's talk about what you are putting into those places. So you have your folders figured out. Let's talk about placing your files. A couple things I recommend with files. Number one, when you are saving files on your computer, be descriptive with it. Okay? I know it can kind of feel like writer's block sometimes when you have to save a receipt or a document or a file that someone sent you, whatever it may be. Go ahead and include things that are obvious and are factual, things like dates, prices, items, vendors, customers, whoever, whatever this relates to, put it in the file name. Number two, be consistent with it, okay? So as you figure out these things that you want to include in your files, use things like putting the year, the month, and the day into files that are date specific, and put these in reverse order, at least reverse for American minds, okay? Put the year first, the month next, and then the day, because that's an order that a computer can sort, a computer can understand. Your files will stay organized when you put it in a way that is sortable. All right? Use conventions. So figure out what your convention is for how you label your files for any given type of file, and then use that consistently. So, for example, this might be how I save a receipt on my computer. I put the year, the month, the day, the price, and the vendor, .pdf, right? So as long as you use that same convention every single time that I save a receipt, it's going to be searchable. It's going to be sortable, and the most important crucial information is going to be readily available. So it's easy to find and utilize in the future. One thing I also recommend with files is be incremental. So apply versions or descriptions to file copies. So if you have a file, and you make a change to it, then you might want to save that file as something else. So here's a file of my workplace, and I'm going to apply a quick edit to this. Let's go ahead and rotate it, and then we're going to hit save as copy. It's a good idea to save a copy rather than going and overwriting the original with my edit. Now, I'm going to take this original file name, and I'm just going to write rotate it after it and hit save. That's a good way to manage your files. Save it at the same place. Just change the name a little bit with your copy so you know what each file is, and save it that way. Now, as we think about, there's a couple things that I do want to talk about with where to put these files in folders yet. And that is different kinds of folder structures. So there's three, once you figure out what your main accounts are that represent your folders, there's three different types of folder structures that you might want to consider from there. The first one is about the most simple, and that's a chronological structure. So chronological structure has to do with dates, and photo storage is a good example of this. Your photos are taken at a point in time. So a good idea with photos is just make a folder for every year for your photos, and then make a subfolder for every month. And once again, you see this reverse date structure that I'm using that keeps that in order? Okay, so that's that makes sure that these stay in line, and I can include descriptive labels here if necessary to keep that orderly. Now, another folder structure is cyclical. So, for example, imagine that you are managing the files for Reach, and you know that Reach happens every 2 years. And when it comes time to do Reach, we have to keep track of things like brochures, emails, handouts, signs, and slides that apply to every single Reach event. Well, this is cyclical. This comes around year after year after year. So in a case of a cyclical file structure, a good idea is to create that file structure, and then every time that it comes around again, just copy and paste your folder, duplicate your folder. That way, you start from where you left off last time, you make whatever additional changes are necessary, and you still have the history to look back to, but you're only making it better in the future. Another example here would be your year-end taxes. You might have a folder where you keep your taxes organized with things like tax returns, W-2s. Keep that folder structure intact so that it's consistent year after year. And then individual projects or entities might be things like if you have clients that you have to look after. For example, I worked in marketing. This is the folder structure that we used for each and every single client. Their photos, their videos, their company info. And we detail this out to say exactly what we want to put where in that folder structure. And then we keep one folder for every client. And when it comes time to bring on a new client, we take our master folder template and we copy it and name it with the client's name. And then we start putting things into it. And it'll keep you and your team nicely organized. Any questions about file and folder structures based on the discussion? Okay, let's talk here briefly about going paperless. So once you have your folders in place and you know where you're going to put these files, it's a good idea to think about going paperless and eliminating the corrupt of papers in your organization. So first step to going paperless is assemble your tools, get a paper shredder, get a little desktop scanner, and get a second monitor so that you have more space to actually look at your files. When it comes to scanning and shredding everything, I recommend a little program called NAPS. And I don't have time to illustrate that all here, but it's a fantastic little program to make your files into PDFs. File them in Windows Explorer, and one thing I want to show you in Windows Explorer is use this little sidebar. So this little preview sidebar will help you to look through a series of files very quickly and actually view the contents of those files, and if it's a PDF file, you can browse through it. And so this works very effectively for storing and retrieving files on your computer. The final thing with that is use the free Adobe Reader, which allows you to do filling and signing your files. With just the free Adobe Reader, you can scan a paper in, and it will let you fill out all of the fields with your keyboard, and it will even let you put your signature on that file right on the screen. So even things like your tax documents or government forms or whatever are able to be filed that way. Okay, I think that's the most crucial pieces of ordering your space. Once you have that down, you have you are further ahead than 80% of the population. I have a couple more resources and ideas that you can find in the slide deck orderingyourdigitalworld.com. Go and grab that slide deck and check it out. I am out of time, but if you want to discuss any of these ideas further, I'm available. Thank you all for your time and attention.
Thank you for listening. All recordings from Reach 2022 are available from Christian Learning Resource, the campus bookstore at Faith Builders. To purchase additional recordings from Reach or other Faith Builders events, visit us online at www.christianlearning.org or call us at 814-789-4769.